I wanted to pick something that the people have been asking a lot of questions about, not necessarily recently, but over the last, say, post-COVID. Post-COVID, got a lot of Ayin Hara Shilas. So I wanted to take a time to kind of address what it is, what it isn't. Like, how many when you were kids, they would say, like, don't sit in that wheelchair, it's an Ayin Hara. Right? Don't play with the crutches, right? You ever heard this? Right? Some of them, like, don't open an umbrella up inside a house. Yes. Yes. So it's hard to know what's above a mice and what's like a really dying heart. Like, if you step over somebody, right, you have to step back across. Okay, well, some of these things might have sources. Some of these things might just be like, you know, your parents playing games with you. But we'll go slow. And I guess part one is just sources where you do find the real Ayin Hara, where it's mentioned in the Torah. So the first is the story with Sarah and Hagar. That we know that Avram was not able to have children for many years with his beloved wife, Sarah. And she tells him, okay, take a co-wife, take Hagar, and perhaps I'll get built up through her. So Hagar became pregnant, and once Hagar became pregnant, she started looking down at Sarah Imenu and saying, well, must be that she's not so righteous as she pretends to be. I got pregnant the first time with Avram. She's been all these years, no kid. Must be she's one big faker. So whatever, again, not for now, but Sarah Imenu put an Ayin Hara on her. And if you look in the first source, that's the Medrash, but Rashi quotes this. It says, Vayavel Hagar Batar. He came to Hagar and she got pregnant. Umatam Loimar. What does it mean to teach me? She already was pregnant. He neach Hara Vilada Ben. You're pregnant, you're going to give birth to a bun. No, Elam Alamin, this teaches that she was pregnant before. And now this is like a second time she's going to get pregnant. Shehechnisa bosar ayin ra. It's not ayin hara. It's actually Ryan ayin ra. Vehipila ubra. And she had a miscarriage. So Sarah Mina did that to her, and then she does the same thing. Puts the ayin hara on Yishmael, her son, after he is born. In the Rashi, the next source, again in Perek Chaf Aleph, Esayelad. Af hayelad sam al shichma, she had to put the child on when she's being banished, right, sent away on her shoulder. Vechnisav sar ayin ra'a, because again, Sar put the ayin ra'a on her. Vachazto chama v'lo yochel leilech biraglav. He couldn't walk because of this. So that's one case. Again, not if we're doing a parshanut, we discuss what's going on over there with Sar and Hagar and Yishmael. And that's not for now. But just you see clearly in the Torah, Medrash Rashi quotes that there is an idea of an ayin hara. We had recently as well. When the brothers are coming down to Mitzrayim, right, to find, you remember what their advice was? All 10 brothers should not go into one gate, because you're a bunch of strong, attractive, healthy, powerful people. It's going to cause a sensation. So Rashi, this is the second source you have here, when they came, matminam atzmam shlo yakirum. They had to hide themselves, right? Literally hiding, covering themselves. Lefishitziva lehem avihim, their father, Yaakov commanded all the brothers, Shelo Yisrael kulam bePesach echad. They all shouldn't go through one entrance way to the city, to Mitzrayim. Ele sheikanes kol echad bePischo. Each one should go through a separate entrance, not at the same time. You see here, kilo kidei, Shelo tishlot bahem ayin hara. That the ayin hara shouldn't be on them. Shekulam noim, they were all pleasant. The chulam giborim, they're all strong. Because the shvatim are like this. So when a person is, you know, has milus, whether they're attractive, whether they're athletic, whether they're smart, whether they're wealthy, then they put it all together, so that could cause an ayin hara to come upon a person. And this speaks volumes about the social media, right? The movie stars and the celebrities and everything's in the paparazzi, everything's putting so much attention focused on a person. You're setting yourself up for potential danger because you see the ayin hara could be coming, right? Causing them. Just go through a few more examples. The next one on here is this was actually in last week's Parsha. Parsha's Vayechi. When we go through the brachos, we know that before Yaakov Vinu passes away, he gives a brach that's unique to each one of his sons. And there's a lot to learn from that. The fact that the parents have to realize that each one of the kids are different. Right? You can't make one formula for all your kids. I like to quote Rav Willig. Rebbe had 9 children. I think 9 kids went to 9 different schools. That's 9 different tuition bills for us. but the point is that every kid has to be given chanach l'narach bidarko. Next week, we do a parsha here on Monday nights. So next week, we're going to do a parsha. We're going to quote from the great tzaddik, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. So we do on the parshas. We'll do something on parshas Ve'era. But he has a famous comment with Yaakov and Esav. And he says that the problem was they tried to put Yaakov and Esav into the same chinuch system. And we all know this, with our own kids or our tamidim, like not every kid is cut out the same. Some kids need to spend 90% of the time in the gym, and other kids need to spend 90% of the time in the library. And if you try to put that kid who's been in the library in the gym, like he's going to sit on the like on the, sit on the bleachers, like, twiddling his thumbs. And the kid who's like wants to be playing ball and running around and wrestling, like, you put him in front of a book, like he's going stir crazy. So you have to know what each kid needs. If, again, you have to be a big tzaddik like Rav Shimshon Falhurst to suggest such a thing, but if Yitzchak and Rivka would have given their kids the proper chinuch, Esav wouldn't have been this terrible, and he would have been a warrior. He would have taken that path, the ish soda, the man who's outside of the field, they would have fought, they would have conquered the world. Yaakov with the sefer, and Esav with a sword, they would have been unstoppable. Again, we're not here to criticize the Avos, but Rav Shimshon Falhurst does point that out. That so again, back to our context, that each one of the Shvatim got their own unique bracha. We know that Naftali, we spoke about this on Shabbos, was the Ayala Shlucha. He was the fast. He was the runner. He was the swift like deer. And we know that there was Malchus, and there was Levi were the leaders, the spiritual leaders. So when it comes to Yosef, if you look in the next source, number 3, it says Ben Paras Yosef. He's a charming child, Bain Poras Ale Ayin, who's, really means by the springs, I'm looking on the English side, they translate, Benos Tzada Ale Shur, that the daughters would step up on the rocks to look at him, that the Medrash tells us that Yaakov was this handsome 17-year-old, you know, parading through the streets, and all the women like to want to get a view of him, right? And that's how he didn't look at them, right? He didn't look where he was supposed to look. So they're trying to get his attention. So the Medrash tells us there was a girl, and she dropped an amulet on the floor in front of him. And he looked down to see it, and he saw that handwriting looked familiar. The girl who dropped that was Osnos. You know who Osnos? He marries her, right? Do you know who she was back in the day? Where she came from? I gotta tell you, it's a good Medrash. Osnos was a child who was born when Dina was violated by Shechem. She got pregnant. She had a baby. That little girl was Osnos. The Shvatim wanted to kill her. So the Medrash says they took the little baby and put her by a sneh. By a what? What's a sneh? A bush, right? The bush. So they put her by the bush, and that's where the name Osnos comes from the word sneh. So then they were going to get her. So they took that baby and they brought her down, but they put a kameya, an amulet, on her. That this is basically Yaakov girl. She's from the house of Yaakov. And they put the amulet on her, and they brought, the Malach brought her down to Mitzrayim. There she was adopted by Potiphar and his wife because they couldn't have children. So they adopted her. So that was the girl. So when she was trying to get Yaakov's attention, he took off the amulet that says that I'm from the family. And he looked down and he saw that. So that's what the Medrash says, but he wouldn't look. Yosef would not look where he wasn't supposed to look. As a result, as a bracha, as a mita k'neged mita, from the fact that Yosef didn't look where he wasn't supposed to look, so he was rewarded. Rashi points out at the bottom of the box, Odarshu le'inyan shelo yishlot bizarro ayin hora. So just like Yosef did not look where he wasn't supposed to look, so then ayin hora will not have any rule over him or any of his descendants. Va'ach sheberech Menashe v'Ephraim, and when the bracha was given, when Yaakov gives the bracha to Yosef's sons, Ephraim and Menashe, she'ein ein hara sholetes b'hem, that they also will be like the fish, and that they're covered. On this, there's a big Indian to eat fish by Shabbos. Just try to have fish. The discussion in the Achronim, what if I only have one piece of fish? Like, which meal should get it? They discuss, like, which is the most chashuv of a meal to get. But some people are very strict. They have fish at every meal. By the tzaddikim, hope I don't gross anybody out here. By the tzaddikim, they eat the eyeball of the fish. My wife will let me have. I get like maybe you get like a piece of gefilte fish or something like that. But I've seen by tzaddikim, they'll take the eyeball. There's a whole idea that's tied to this very deep union of the ayin hara. How it won't be sholit, how it can't rule over a person. The ayin, a lot of the symbolism behind the eye of a fish. But the way that Rashi's learning it is that just like an ayin hara, the fish are covered. The fish are all covered. They're protected in the water. Nothing can harm them. Nothing can penetrate. Right? The light has to refract to get onto the fish. So too, Yosef and his descendants, but Yidgularov, right, will multiply like the fish. So again, what do we see so far? We started off, we saw one example with Hagar and Sarah. We saw with the Shvatim when they came in. We see with Yosef and his children or not, but the iron horse is pregnant. Another example is when the Torah was given, that we know that the first set of luchos were destroyed and the second ones were permanent. So the Medrash tells us, a Midrash Tanchuma, the next source, Okay, you should really hew, chisel out for yourself and be prepared in the morning. You're going to get the luchos. Yom hashlishi boker. They can hear. Vegam ish al yira. Haluchos rishonos al shenitnu befumi, because they were given with there was thunder and lightning and pomp and circumstance and a big presentation. Lefikach sholta behem ayin hora. Shenish tabru. They were broken. When it's like things are being flaunted. But things are being presented. And again, this is a positive thing. This is giving the Torah. This is like the highlight of world history. But nevertheless, the way it was presented, so therefore the Ayin Hara was there and they broke. Didn't have a permanence to it. There's nothing more beautiful than... Now, tznius does not translate as modesty. To explain what tznius really means. If you look at the Aramaic word tznua, it means monach, which means to be put in its proper place. Tznius means that everything is put in its proper place. Tznius applies to men and to women. I was once a Rebbetzin, someone was asked, like, how can you tell whether something is tznu or not? How do you know? So she gave a great answer. She said, when you walk into the room, everyone's head shouldn't turn to look at you. Modesty. That's what it means to be tznu, men and women. But so the second luchos were given with this tznius, right? It was in a more, called a more humble way. Right, Uma Shneim. The pasuk Uma Hashem Dorish Mimcha. What does Hashem ask of you? Ki im la asos mishpat va'avas chesed say leches, to walk with modesty. So even the luchos had a problem with an ayin hara on them, and they were broken. So if we want things to be permanent, we want things to last. So we should not put them flaunting them. The ayin hara should be on them. I remember hearing from Rabbi Simon. I don't know which one of his talmidim it was, but he told a story where one of his students apparently had like a beauty contest. And the guy had twin daughters. He put the picture in, and they won. So he asked Rabbi Simon, they want to put the picture of my daughters, the twins, on a magazine cover. Like, they won the beauty contest. He said, 100% no. Don't do it. Don't flaunt. Don't put it out. Baruch Hashem, beautiful kids. That's for the grandparents there. Right? They're not going to get it. But not to put up some strangers to be doing that. That's the idea. And social media has a big problem with this. Like, social media is all about presenting yourself and putting yourself out there and followings and likes and then and follow. It's totally antithetical to the Torah's approach to these things. Even social media in general, it's not for now, but like, they did a spoof of a video of like a husband and wife were out on a date, like a 3-hour date, and like 98% of the evening was a total disaster, screaming at each other, yelling, fighting, cursing, da da da. And they had like, six like good moments, 6 minutes throughout the 3-hour date, and they took six pictures, right? So you go on Facebook, you go on TikTok, you go on Instagram, Snapchat, whatever, and those six beautiful pictures, and you don't see the 2 hours and 54 minutes they were screaming like at each other's throats, right? The whole thing is a farce. The whole thing is sheker v'chazov. But that's something you have to think about. There's a powerful Gemara. This is probably one of the most powerful things to recognize how strong. Again, we're just presenting this to build up the idea. You see how the Ayin Hara is a real thing, and the Torah takes it very seriously. In source number 5, the Gemara has a discussion. It's in Bava Metzia. It says, I'll read the English side. The Gemara returns to expounding the themes of the blessings and the evil eye. The Torah states, the Lord will take away from you all sickness. In interpreting the verse, Rav says this is speaking about the evil eye. The Gemara comments, Rav conforms to his line of reasoning. As Rav went out to a graveyard, he did what he did. This is according to Rashi, that he did some sort of incantation, whatever it was, to ask these people how they died, and said 99 of these died by the Ayin Hara, and one of them died was called Derech Eretz, normal, natural means. So 99 of the people in this cemetery were due to an Ayin Hara. It's a frightening thought. So how does it work? How does it work? Are you thinking about somebody? You don't like the outfit they're wearing? You're jealous? And like, what does an Ayin Hara do? It's a real thing. And you see in the davening, like, how do you see, like, the chamsa? Right? Okay, we'll get to the chamsa in a minute. What's that you have?
Esther.
It's Sephardim. Yeah, Sephardim. Every Sephardim. You're not Sephardim, you're not the chamsa.
In the art project, the art affair we did here.
Yeah, yeah.
She asked the lady for the chamsa.
To make the chamsa. That's a big thing. So look, we say this in the davening. This is part of the tefillah we say by brachos every morning. Yehira tzel milfanecha, Hashem, l'kai, l'kei v'sai, shetatzilena hayom v'choyim, should save me today and every day, may azay fanim from being chutzpadik, may azus panim from brazenness, may adam ram a bad person, may yetzara from my mad inclination, may chaver from bad neighbor, chav bad friend, but shechenra bad neighbor, pegra bad encounter, right? May ayin hara. We ask Hashem to be saved from the ayin hara every single day. So it certainly is a real thing. So how do we save ourselves? Like how do we protect ourselves from this? Say, watch, here we go. Make the following hand motion. Hook your thing like this, and then tuck your thumbs into your palms like this. You ready? You ready? You see it? Yeah? You flip your hands, and then you tuck your thumbs in. The Gemara says like this. What do you do if you feel like the ayin hara is being put on you? So Gemara in Bracha says like this. You interlock your hands like this, and you look right underlined. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says you do this motion, and you say the following thing, what's underlined. Ana ploni bar ploni, me, so-and-so, mizera de Yosef ko'asina, I come from, I'm a descendant of Yosef, de lo shalta be'ena bisha, and the evil eye, the ayin hara, did not rule over Yosef. So that's what you do, and now you're protected. Now the ayin hara can't get you. So 1 second. I don't know about you, but how could anybody say with certainty you're a descendant of Yosef? Ona, I, right? Mizara, I'm the Zera, I'm the child, the offspring of Yosef. I come from Yosef. Really? You know that for a fact? Like you have a whole yichus back to Yosef? Because we saw the bracha. Rashi says the bracha was that the Ayin Hara won't affect the descendants of Yosef. So you're saying, oh, I'm one of his. So we'll see a few interpretations what that means to say that you're from the descendants of Yosef. But at first glance, it's very hard to say with certainty that you're on that. But that's the Gemara's Eitzah, is what the person should do. So I want you to understand what exactly, like how does it work? We see it's a real thing. We see you have to protect yourself from it. So the Rabbeinu Yonah on Pirkei Avos starts talking a little bit about of these ideas. Maybe we'll do the English. He's quoting on the famous Mishnah, which says, if you have in source number 7, Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Ayin hara, right, the bad eye, the evil eye, Yetzahara, a person's bad inclination, Vesinas abrios, and hating people, Motzian esa odom and olmi, literally, they pull a person out of the world. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains, Rav Shua says, the evil eye, right, ayin hara, its explanation is one who's not happy with his lot, and places his eye on his fellow who's wealthier than he, thinking, when will I be as wealthy as this great man, right? So a person means, I'm not satisfied, I'm not sameach bechelko. I don't think like, oh, thank you for everything you've given me. I'm looking to see what my next door neighbor has, or you know, the fancier car, the fancier vacation, the fancier house, the fancier wife, the fancier outfits, the fancier fill in the blank, the bigger yacht than I have, right? So a person who's like that is they're saying Yitzhahara, and it causes evil to himself and to his fellow. Now this is the Rabbeinu Yonah writing one of the Rishonim. It's like the wise men of science say about everything. That is his neighbor's vapor comes up from that thought and burns the things he puts his eye towards with an evil eye. So there's something that's like, it's like a destructive force that happens. He also burns himself inside since he desires things, the thought of which he does not have the ability in his hand to materialize. He destroys his body. He shortens his spirit and removes it from the world. That's the evil eye which Rabbi Yoshua spoke. So this is proven that the person's thoughts, right, both positive or the opposite, have an effect upon the physical health of a person. When a person's thinking positively, like even in English, you're saying like you're burning with jealousy. Right? You're creating a fire inside of yourself when doing this. So it takes a person out of this world. It harms a person by thinking negatively about that. Now, is that the other person's fault that they happened to? Well, maybe they did something to flaunt it, but let's say they didn't. Still, the fact that you're looking at them with a jealousy of that and thinking, well, what I get? Because when you look at somebody with that and think, what did they do to deserve this? So that causes like an accusation. It causes an accusation to that person. Well, what did they do to deserve this? And they get examined. Well, what do you do to deserve what you have in your life? So it becomes a vicious cycle. So part of the way to avoid the ayin hara is to have positive thoughts. Right? Does that make sense? That when you're thinking in a positive way about people and you're not trying to be, you know, incriminate them and holding them up for being scrutinized, for why do they get that and I don't? That's part of it. I found this online from Rabbi David Rosenfeld, next source. The concept behind it is actually rather straightforward. If we flaunt our blessings and draw undue attention to ourselves, it invokes the jealous notice of others. Drawing such negative attention also draws the notice of the heavenly court, and it causes our judgment to be visited. Do we really deserve the blessings which engender the ill will of so many others? I mean, just like you're jealous of that guy, somebody else is jealous of you. My mother, she should be well. She had a great saying as a kid. I have to remember how it goes. I cried because I didn't have any shoes, and I saw a man who had no feet. As a kid, I over and over and over again. That was one of my mother's, like, just... right? But you always look to see what you have, not right? And take count your blessings. Thus, in the eyes of Judaism, right, Ayin Hara, evil eyes, not some spooky, nebulous force which goes about attacking the unsuspected. It's a logical phenomenon. And for the most part, the result of our own indiscreet behavior. So if we want to protect ourselves from an Ayin Hara, which everybody does, it's a real thing, we have to think about not flaunting the brachos that we have. And there's nothing wrong with having brachos. Hashem should continue to give us brachos. But there's an idea of, Baruch Hashem, you have beautiful twin girls? Gevaldik, enjoy that. You don't have to put it on front of a magazine cover. Hashem has given us brachos. Amazing. We want brachos. We want to continue to have brachos. But not to be, you know, in your face about it.
I think the Sfarim, they do that a lot. No, not flaunted.
Yeah. Poo.
Right. Right. You can't talk about my brand, like I can't ask anything.
Yeah.
You see, walking, rarely.
Yeah.
He slept well, he doesn't sleep well. Like, it's the opposite. Esther, my girl, I can't answer. I'm too afraid to even ask. They're really, maybe it's hard on her mom, or I don't know.
No, it's a culture. It's a cultural thing.
Culture.
Yeah.
You can't ask anything. When the baby was born, did you put something with your grandson? They put the red string.
Oh, we'll get to the red band. Yeah, okay.
And a pin I saw by the stroller.
Yeah.
My grandma did the red.
Red. Right.
And my sister would work. Yeah.
How many guys have seen this? Right, the red strings, right?
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
All right.
They still have it. I don't even know.
By the
Kotel. Right.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you honestly. The majority opinion is not to take this too seriously. There is one authentic source that does talk about having the red string. It's based on the Gemara in Shabbos. I should have put it in the source booklet. The Gemara in Shabbos, it talks of a person. I think it's in the Daf Samach Zayin's is all around there. Person has a tree that's sick. The tree is not well. The tree needs a refuah shlema. So what do? So that people should notice it? You tie this like red string around. People look and say, oh, why is there a red string on this tree? And then you start looking at the tree. And oh, it's not producing any fruits. I'm going to daven this person. Okay, back then, fruits, that was your parnasa. I'm going to daven this tree. Should have refuah shlema. We'll make a mishaberch for it. we want things to go well for you. That's the, like the source in the Gemara behind it. The Munkacher has where he brings a source for why we do this. It seems to me the majority of Meforshim do not take this too seriously. I think my mother told me I had a red thing on my crib when I was too young to protest. What can I tell you? But okay. So there are some sources that do, you know, justify such a thing. But the majority opinion is not to take these things. But we'll see. I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Let's go to part two now. Like, what exactly is this Ayin Hara? To prevent, you know, three different ways of understanding. Again, let's just quickly review. We saw sources, right, in Psukim and in Midrashim and in Gemaras that talk about the seriousness of it, right, the Meforshim. So try to understand, this is the Maharal. The Maharal, during his lifetime, he was not known as a mystic. During his lifetime, Rav Shechter points out, he was a posek. He was a rav. He gave shiurim. Afterwards, after he passed away, then people start looking and see his mystical writings. And he discusses this in Nesivas Olam. He talks about this. I don't know if I'm going to read everything. There's three columns over here. Let me do just, I'll do the box underneath it. Ki ayin hara yesh b'koch ishi soref u'mekabel ha'odom hezek min hamazik asher yesh l'koch ishi soref. It has this like burning fire to it. Ki ayin hazeh soref kamo ha'esh shehu soref. So really, I forget, I think those ones like comic book people, Marvel or DC, he had like the vision, he could look and like shoot fire or something like that. No? Who was it? Cyclops, yes, yeah, very good. Oh, yeah. Bacchius, good, okay. So Cyclops, imagine like...
Superman and DC
also. Was DC?
Well, no, Superman and DC have...
Oh, Superman, right, see, yeah. Zelu Mazer, right? You have, yeah, this power. So imagine not like real fire, but imagine like a spiritual fire going out. That like when you're looking at something, that's what the Maharal is explaining. You're sending like a spiritual fire that could burn something up. At their worst, I didn't put it on here also. There was, I think it's the Torah Tamima who quotes this again. In the Russians were very sadistic. No commentary about what's happening now in Russia, but back in the day, they would chain a person in jail, like the hands behind their back or locked in, and they'd put like a loaf of bread like right in front of them. right? No, right? Yeah, not you. I'm just saying with the. So the prisoner was looking at this loaf of bread and just thinking like the most evil, destructive thoughts. And after he died of hunger, they cut open the bread and it was like filled with maggots. It's his thoughts or something like putting negative energy into the. It was a whole story, but that's what he's saying here. The Chazon Ish says the same thing in Bava Basra. He's taught there's a passage in the Gemara. It comes up two ways in Shas, but the Gemara say a lashon like this. It says Noson Bo Einav Nasa Gal Shalat Samos. They placed their eyes on him and turned the person into bones, like disintegrated them. So the Chazon Ish is working on that. If you look where it says on the right hand side, Shamna Havbe Rabbonin Einayhu, they put their eyes on Venoch Nafshi, the person died. Mesodos Habriya, one of the secrets of the world that is created. Kia Adam Machshavto Humenia Gormim Nistarim Ba'olam Hamaisa Machshavto Hakala Tucha Lishamesh Gorim Laharas Lachorban Shel Gishamim. That person with their thoughts, that Machshava can create a physical. Can they physically inquire? Sha'alta Baha'ena, that a person with their looking at things and thinking things can physically affect the world. Right? If you look in the English at the bottom, it says a simple thought expressed through one's eyes, because that's what the Gemara of the Lashon is using. Nosam Ba'ena, he put his eyes on him, he beat the law like that, can cause terrible destruction among solid physical things. This is one of the mechanisms that Hashem uses to carry out his din in the world, and it's possible the greater a person is, the greater will be his power contained within his eyes. One of the Gemaras that comes to mind is the famous story with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that he and his colleagues were talking about the Romans, and there was this Yehudim Megeim who overheard them. And he started talking in the news, your friend has a friend, and your friend has a friend, and the news started traveling. Like they say, like a secret, the definition of a secret is something that you only tell one person at a time. That's a secret. So he had a secret, he only told one person at a time, but it got out, the secret got out. And because that, Shimon Bar Yochai had to run for his life, and he ended up going to the cave for 13 years, and finally at the end, he sees him. They have a reunion after these 13 years of his hiding. And that's what the Gemara says. Nosim ba'enav and asagal shalat samos. Is this person still in the world? He looked at him, the guy just disintegrated. So that's what the Chazon Ish, again, this is in Bava Basra, a different Gemara, but it's that concept that the person's eyesight, thoughts, have the power to make this like almost like a destructive type of force. Okay, that's one eye way of it. Next, you have from the Michtav Miliyahu, Rav Dessler, who was the Mashgiach in the Ponovitch Yeshiva. And he writes here in the next, this is number 11, the mechanism of the Ein Hara is rooted in spirituality of all people being connected to one another. Ein Hara means that you're jealous of another and bothered by their very being, therefore wants only bad. Since all people's lives are mutually dependent on one another, it's possible this will cause the successful person's life to be limited and thereby more susceptible to the injury or damage, right? Like we saw the Gemara that 99% of the people passed away through an Ein Hara. The Maharal taught that even a lack of concern for another can be considered like an Ayin Hara. Whoever is aware of another's needs and has the ability to help, but is uninterested in doing so, is declaring to other persons is irrelevant and superfluous to him. When one's jealous of another and gaze upon with an Ayin Hara, this can cause damage. However, justice demands this will only happen if the recipient of the Ayin Hara had previously done something wrong to make himself vulnerable to the Ayin Hara. One possibility would be that he had caused the first person to be jealous in a very specific manner. It could be flaunted something like that. You incited this person, so to speak, against you. It's clear and well established that one who is not self-focused is a giver and not a taker, and all of his manners will not arouse any jealousy. That's why the descendants of Yosef are not susceptible to the Ayin Hara, because Yosef was so selfless. If you think about it, he gave and provided for the entire country. He had the opportunity to take revenge against his brothers. He was the most powerful person. He could have like bumped them off, just eliminated them. But he didn't. He was one who was constantly giving and giving and giving. So now we came back to the Gemara we saw. When you interlocked your hands and said, I come from Yosef, I'm behaving like Yosef. Not that I'm the biological descendant. Who knows? Who could tell? You're not allowed to say a lie. You can't say, I'm from Yosef. No, but I'm behaving like Yosef. I'm being a giver, not a taker. I'm being selfless. I'm not trying to flaunt what I have. When I'm behaving like that, that's what it says. Chazal are thereby teaching that one who lives out of the public eye and whose aspirations are completely separate from those of the street will not arouse jealousy. So according to the Michtav Beliyahu, the Ayin Hara is something where you're showing it off. again, according to the first approach of the Maharal and the Chazon Ish, it's like this like fiery thing, is like power that becomes unleashed. According to this, is a result of a person flaunting with what their brachos are, and therefore that's what can bring the Ein Hor, because you, so to speak, set yourself up for this. Another one is from Rav Soloveitchik, Zatzal. So if you look at the next one, he has the whole the psychological impact of it. So he's going to give a different explanation of what it means to say that you're a descendant from Yosef. So he says in Source 12, the matter of Ayin Hara is crystal clear to me. There are people whose lives are entirely dependent on the thoughts of others, whether they approve of them, forget about them, or praise them. It's sad, right? It's a nebuch, but some people, like, their whole self-worth is dependent on, like, how many likes they get, right? What are people going to say about me? They tell the joke, when you're 20 years old, right, you walk into the room and you're 20 years old and you say, like, what's everybody going to be talking about me? You're very concerned about what people are talking about you. Then you're 40 years old and you walk in the room and you say, I don't care what people talk about me. I don't care what people say about me. Then you're 60 years old and you realize they were never talking about you in the first place. But a person who nebuch, they're so, they need such approval seeking, right? It comes from a lack of self-esteem. So at the moment they realize that others no longer approve of them or care about them, this immediately destroys their spiritual strength and self-confidence. People like this see themselves exclusively from the perspective of others without recognizing their independent abilities. For people like this, the Ayin Hara can be devastating. When others gaze upon them with an Ayin Hara, meaning some degree of opposition or disapproval, their very humanity can be completely destroyed. Right? Because you're at the whim of somebody else's opinion. Right? And it has a lot to do with a person's expectations. Let's say, for example, you're going out, you come to a kiddush, and you expect when you come to the kiddush that the 30 people are going to come over to you and say good Shabbos. How are you doing? So out of the 30 people that you thought, only 2 people came over and said good Shabbos to you that week. So your expectations were 30 people and 2 people. Right? You had huge expectations. There was such a discrepancy. But if your expectation when you walk into the room, maybe one person will come say good Shabbos to me. And now 2 people came. I doubled my expectations. I was wildly successful. I had no idea. Like, 2 people came. I was like, it all depends on a person's, how they feel. A person who's well adjusted, it's okay. You want people to take a shop? So good. And they don't. It doesn't make or break your day whether somebody, again, you want to be polite to it. Obviously, you want to be friendly. But it goes in all areas of life. Like, what are your expectations out of this? So if you feel like you need somebody's outside verification for your own self-worth, says Rav Soloveitchik, that's an Ayin Hara. This is the meaning where Yochanan said, when I'm the offspring of Yosef. He didn't mean he had a tradition, he was actually his descendant. But rather, this quality, he's similar to Yosef. Right? A little bit different understanding the way Rav Dessler explained. But he's saying, Yosef understood his spiritual strengths from his own recognition, not from the perspective of others. And without this recognition that he had of his own abilities, independent of the values of others, in this case his brothers, Yosef would never have amounted to anything, and his dreams would have immediately ceased. But a person has confidence, and that's an idea of behaving like Yosef. So again, we can't say who our ancestors were, but we can say that we're going to behave like Yosef. So okay, a lot of discussion. This comes along Rav Moshe and says, he quotes the Gemara in Pesachim, in Arbe Pesachim, what if, like, I just don't buy into any of this. Yeah, I see the Gemara talks about it in Rashi and there's Midrashim. Okay, but like, yeah, I don't really spend my day worrying too much about Ayin Hara. So that's good. It's a good thing. Says Rav Moshe in, this is now Source 13. Be'inyan Ayin Hara. Look on the page, they're not numbered. It's like on the last page. Be'inyan Ayin Hara. Vada yesh lachush. You should certainly be concerned. It's a real thing. We've established that. It's not like there's some superstition thing that, like, some fairy tale that, we tell kids when they're little. Aval ein lahakpid harbe. But don't be so overly worried about this. Don't be so makpid on this. Can we devarim ke'elu? Because in things like this, haklal, the rule is man de lo kopid lo kapdinim behedya. That if you're not worried about it, then it's not going to bother you. That's a healthy attitude for people that should not lose sleep over the Ayin Hara. It's a real thing, and there are, since it is a real thing, there are people who know how to take off an Ayin Hara. From a person, I personally witnessed this. I brought somebody to get a bracha from a very chashuv rebbetzin. Her father was a big tzaddik, and she looked at this person and said, "You have an Ayin Hara on you." She says, "I have a chasna tzaddik. I don't have time. You know, like when they melt the lead, they hold the thing. It's the whole procedure." She says, "I don't have time to do this. You need 2 people, and I'm making a chasna, but I know a different way of doing it. It's burning matches." So she did what she did, took off this ayin hara. It's a real thing. Again, there are people like, I've seen this, there's like an article in the newspaper in like the Five Towns or something like that about that you can you know, call up and there's this lady. It's a real thing. I don't know. I can't like. There's not like a smicha. You know, like I have smicha taking off an ayin hara. I don't know how these things work. It's like a different pay grade. But there are people who really know what it is, a real thing, and there are people who really know how to take it off. But yeah, that's why it leads into the little picture. If you printed out the color version, you have the red being on the black and white version. It looks but that's the red bendel. Says Rav Kook in Ein Ayah, his comments on Brachos, because souls have the ability to impact one another, it's impossible for an ayin hara to cause evil. I said I read it wrong. It's possible for an ayin hara to cause evil. However, this will not work unless the affected soul is weak. This weakness comes from not having a healthy self-worth, which is really like what Soloveitchik was saying, the same thing. And as a result, the central focus of the activities are based on an internal facade that meets the eye. So if a person has healthy self-control, self-esteem, this is not going to have any issues over them. Just a few last sources on the back page. Yeah, from the Ben Ish Chai. This is the source of the Chamtza. When the Ben Ish Chai was a great Rav, Rav Chaim Yosef Azulai. No, wait. Chaim Yosef, yeah, I got the name right. Okay, east of the Gemara, it's on the top right corner. The Hinatza Me'ayin Hara, if you want to save yourself, it quotes psukim that a person could say, right? Haba Peter came selling Yomar and say, Ana Mizara de Yosef Kasena, right? That we said this on. I come from Yosef, you could say this. Ben Paras Yosef, which we saw, that was the pasuk, that was the bracha that Yaakov gave to his son Yosef. Ben Paras Alea. Uvesvarim Ksuv Shomer Gamki, you could also say the following. The Yaakov Ishtam Yosef Oholim. Right? Yaakov is the Ishtam. It's simple, which reminds me, he doesn't say this, but it reminds me, there's a pasuk in Chumash Devarim, I think it's in Shoftim, Tamim Tihia Im Hashem Elokecha, which means to be complete and simple with Hashem. The Rashi is not to be Choyker Achar Asidos, try to figure out what's going to be in the future, but it's to accept with Tamimus what Hashem says. So that's what Yaakov is. Yaakov is the Ish Tam. Vegam Yom, another pasuk, Anoch Vani Barav Chazdecha, Avo Vesecha, Eshtach Right? Some people say this pasuk when they come into a shul because they want to count to see if you have a minion. It has 10 words. Va'ani, right? Berov 2, Hastacha 3, Avo 4, Besecha 5, Eshtachava 6, El 7, Heichel 8, Karchecha, right? Yerasecha 10. So that's the pasuk they say when they walk in and count to see if you can't choose, because if you count Jews, it's an ayin hara. So yeah, you don't want ayin hara. So you just want to count to see that. Gam Yonel pasuk, Vayisa Bilam es Eina, Vayar es Yisrael, Shochim Beshwata, Vatehi Allah, Ruach Elokim. Now, the Hagon, you see what's underlined? Chida Zal Kosov. The Chida is what?
A riddle? No.
Like, oh, that is a Chida with, yeah, very good. That's with a hay? With a hay at the end. This is his name. Chaim Yosef David Azulai. Right, that was the name of the Chida that's used by George Davis. So he calls it Minhag Ha'olam Lomar Chamtza. See that? Lechain, and therefore, since they say Chamtza, Tolin eights, they take they hang a piece of wood, Mitsuya bo tsuras kaf, which has the image of a hand on it, a palm, Sheish ba chamesh etz baos, which has five fingers, v'chakuk alav os hey, and they put a what's it called, the letter hey is engraved on the chamsa. This is the source quoting from the Ben Ish Chai. Fine, there are other things besides these psukim, that these specific psukim, if you look on the bottom left, you have a commentary of the Rebbeinu Bechaya, one of the great Rishonim. So the Pasuk reads as follows. It's talking about the Bnei Gad, who are these tremendous warriors. And it says on the top left of the box, Nachnu na'avor chalutzim lifnei Hashem eretz Kenan. Right? We're going to go as the soldiers in front to fight in the land of Israel. So if we had more time, I'd ask you to figure out what's unique about this one Pasuk. Nachnu na'avor chalutzim lifnei Hashem eretz Kenan. Like, if I was in class, I just want to stall for time and give like 17 minutes. Just have the kids like sitting there and like they have them like break the chavrusas and try to figure this out.
Anachnu, but it should be anachnu.
Oh, very good. It should be anachnu. That's the part of the answer. The reason why it starts with a nun, call your attention, the pasuk ends with a nun. Nachnu begins with a nun, and the last word, Kanaan, ends with a nun. There are 11 psukim in all of Tanakh that both begin and end with a nun. This is one of them. And he brings down the source behind this, why there's some mystical reason why certain 11 psukim begin and end with the nun. So he says, very good, said, Rishu said, Anachnu, we will go across. Avabe Pnei, Shehayi Bnei Gad, Baale Koach, Ugavura, as we saw earlier, like that idea about the sons of Yaakov. So here they were strong, they were the fighters, Bechoma Koimus, Litrov Torf Miaveim, they had a special military attack where they could, in one swoop with their hands, with their sword, they could slice off their enemy's arm and their head. So they make the blade would cut across like this. So they explain, Lubavitcher Rebbe explained, because that comes from the koach, the arm and the head are tefillin, right? That our warriors, the Jewish army's strength, our strength really comes from the mitzvos, from the Lom Deitara. That's why I think it started during the Six-Day War, was Lubavitcher's did the tefillin campaign. When Jewish people are at war, as we are now, we have to strengthen our mitzvah observance. And the mitzvah that we see is connected to defeating our enemies is the mitzvah of tefillin. Okay. Now, so he says, because, like, I'm going to skip a little bit. Amna kivalanu. Ki haschalos pasuk ze binun haya bet kivana. There was a specific intention as to why it began with a nun. But pasuk sh'amar yirmiya quotes other psukim. I'm going to skip that a little bit. That where it's underlined at the bottom. Ki sha meforesh yotze, she meforesh yotze me. There are 11 psukim, and there's a name of God, Hashem's name that emerges in this. Eli mishlosh esrei osios ve'im tizkor ha-psukim im Hashem ha-yotze mehem. If you would say these 11 psukim, then there's a name of Hashem that emerges from combining the letters in this. Lotir mipachad. You don't have to be afraid of it. Ki Hashem hamo'il lefachad. Because this is the name of Hashem. I remember when my wife and I got a pre-wedding shmooze from Rav Goldvich, Shlita. He sat us down. Tells a lot of things. One of the things that my wife likes to point out that he said to us at that time that your wife will be right 90% of the time. She never forgot that he said that to us. He also told me we should learn halacha at every meal. He said, yeah, everything. But he says, okay, b'shah tova, when your wife goes pregnant, I'm going to give you a beautiful tefillah to say. So when Rivka was pregnant, I went to Rav Goldvich. I said, okay, he gives him on. So he went, and actually I saw it. I had in the Vilna Siddur, it's printed on page 412. That there are these psukim. He didn't tell me what it was, just this, but I realized it was the 11 psukim that both begin and end with a nun. And he told me then this, and there's the hirat, so you have on the right hand side, these are the psukim. If you see it where it's on like Yud Alf psukim, Shemaschim benun, Masayim benun, Behem Tovim Lishmir. This is a good protection. So the way Rav Goldvich told me to say it was to say the first pasuk three times, then go through this. Negat Saraskis of Al Mahuva Lakoin. Negat Saraskis of Al Mahuva Lakoin. Negat Saraskis of Al Mahuva Lakoin. Then you go, Nachna Avor Chalutzim, right? Then you go through all the other 10 psukim, you just read them once. And then if it's not on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's a Yehi Ratzon you say at the bottom. Ribono Sha'olam, Hatzel Asamcha Beis Yisrael Mikol Mini Cheshafim. Protect us from all types of Kishuf, from black magic. Mikol Mini Ayin Hara. Protect us from all sorts of Ayin Hara. Just like you spread your wings and protected our ancestors in the desert, like Bilam's iron heart didn't rule over, didn't harm them. Cain, so too, with your holy name, the name that comes out from reciting these psukim. So it's a real thing that's brought down in authentic sources. What kind of takeaways from this? You see that we have footnotes over here that it's a real thing. Ayin Hara is a real thing. We should take it seriously. We shouldn't do anything that either, as we talked about, like flaunting the brachas that we have to doing that. Different ways of understanding whether it's like some sort of metaphysical energy that's channeled into a person, or whether it's the person makes themselves vulnerable because they're so dependent on what other people think about them. And different ways of preventing themselves. One way is a healthy dose of humility. Right, and having self-esteem, and that would protect the person from this. Another thing is not to do things that would arouse others from being jealous of what you have. And there are real things, authentic things that are brought down as a shmir against it. Psukim and the chamtza and other things like that. But the best thing to do is to try to, like Rav Moshe says, if you're not overly concerned about this, then you don't have to be worried about it. It's a real thing, but you know... We say, like, don't lose any sleep over it. If this is not, we didn't come tonight to scare anybody. We came to try to explain a little bit what it is and give some practical takeaway messages from it. So, are there any questions? Yeah?
I'm just thinking about, a death glance. People don't describe a death glance. You were saying that
yeah. You can have... If looks could kill, right? Yeah, there was a question? If looks could kill, so maybe they could. I don't know. It's a little scary. Good. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Go ahead.